Sam Gleaves is a very, very traditionally, I think, raised musician, songwriter, mountain Appalachian sound. He has a brand new album, Ain't We Brothers, just came out November 9th, I believe. I played a couple songs already throughout the last couple weeks. As soon as I got it, I really like the album. I've played the title cut, Ain't We Brothers, which is the, he's joined by Tim O'Brien, by the way, on the album. Give you some idea of Sam's credentials. He's joined on the album by Kathy Fink, Tim O'Brien, Marcy Markster, Janice Ian, Lori Lewis. He's getting a lot of attention, and I think that you need to be made more aware of Sam's music. The title cut, which we played several times, is a story about a West Virginia coal miner, a gay true life story of Sam Williams. I'm going to read from the text, or I don't usually do this. Sam Williams, a gay West Virginia coal miner, ostracized and harassed for his sexuality. And the words gone this day evokes the sight of Appalachian lives usually overlooked in bluegrass and old-time music. So that is something that that is important. I think causes are going to wind up being part of the discussion with Sam. I think he's very wise. His lyrics are very, very thought-provoking. And the music is really good. And let's not mistake that for a minute. Sam's going to call in about an hour. We're going to talk about all these things, primarily music. We're going to go wherever it goes. As you know, in the program, I don't use walking talking points. We just kind of talk about stuff that comes up. I think it'll be interesting. As a matter of fact, we're going to start off with my Dixie Darling A.P. Carter tune that Sam wrote some lyrics to. He does that a lot, I think. We're going to find out. I think that he takes old tunes and rewrites them and doesn't necessarily make them all more modern, but gives another reference point for the music that he's involved in. But I think if I've done my job correctly, I believe I should have on the line Sam Gleaves. Are you there, Sam?
Yes, sir.
Hey, good. We did it. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for calling in. I know this is Saturday afternoon. It's kind of a busy time for an artist and a performer, but I do appreciate you.
Well, I appreciate you, Steve. It's cool to be back in Kentucky for a minute. I'm up in New York at the Northeast Regional Folk Alliance this weekend, but it's good to be in touch with Kentucky. So.
Well, listen, you're all over the world, bud. We're on the internet, so you're being heard from here to the moon, I think, because now the internet has successfully jumped off the planet.
So oh, well, amazing.
You're everywhere, bud. Listen, I got a couple months ago, the nice folks at Hearth Music, who keep my mailbox full, sent me your new album, which is good, and sent me your new album, Ain't We Brothers, and I've played for 2 weeks now. I've been playing cuts from it, and I usually play Ain't We Brothers, the title cut, and I've played other ones, but like this afternoon, we started off with my Dixie Darling. I liked what you've done with that A.P. Carter
tune. Well, thank you so much, Steve. I appreciate your support.
Well, you're welcome. The music is, you definitely have a traditional kind of a mountain sound, and I've checked YouTube. I do a little homework when I do these interviews, and I know that you had some songs released earlier, but am I correct that this is the first full-blown album that you've done, Ain't We Brothers?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I recorded some small-scale projects of the traditional music that I was, brought up playing in Southwest Virginia. But I, this is my first effort of songs that I've written, and my first effort working with session musicians and with a producer like Kathy Fink. So it's been great.
Well, listen, even before I got the shrink wrap off, and if you just tuned in, I'm talking to Sam Gleaves about his brand new album, Ain't We Brothers. Before I got the plastic off, I'm looking, let's see, he's got Lori Lewis, Tim O'Brien. Who is this guy? Janice Ian, Kathy Fink, Marcy. Who is? I don't know this guy, but he's got all these people there right with him. So I thought, well, this will be good. This will be a good project. When I got it open, I was not disappointed. And now I know why you have all these people right there in your corner with you, because they all want to support good music.
Well, it was a real thrill, and I'm certainly humbled and honored to get to work with people like Janice Ian and Tim and Lori and Kathy especially. It's been a great journey. I kind of kept my songs in my back pocket for a long time because I thought, this traditional music that I learned in Southwest Virginia, I thought, maybe it needs more representation. Maybe audiences need to hear it more than the new songs that I was writing. But then I kind of realized, that the songs I was writing fell into that tradition and that there were some contemporary issues that needed to be spoken about in song, in an Appalachian voice. So I've tried to do that, and I'm like I said, I'm very honored to have such fantastic guest artists, you know, who have that same vision and that were very generous to
work
with me.
It is, and I think these things all, I think they all contribute back because they've had people that were also assisting them maybe when they were starting out. And, of course, Janice Ian, in my mind, is just, you know, one of the legends of my lifetime. I'm older than you, but I'm telling you, Janice Ian.
Yeah, I mean, me too. I mean, I think her she's just as relevant, you know,
absolutely,
now, and her songs and her writing. I really have a lot of respect for Janice. When she came to the studio, she gave me a copy of her autobiography.
Oh, nice.
Which is called Society's Child.
Mm-hmm.
And I really was moved reading it to know what all she has survived and how music has been a constant outlet, you know, for her, and really that, you know, that art can pull you through so many trying experiences, you know, if you're honest and if you believe in your art, you know. And I really admire her tenacity and you know, there's just the beautiful writing that she shared with
and,
all of us.
And you're right, Sam. She's still doing it. I saw her basically was a solo concert that she did, and this was maybe a couple of years ago when she comes through town, which is not that often. And, yeah, she's still writing relevant things with social conscience and statements to say, and she writes music too, but she never travels far from that center, I think, which is not to beat people over the head, but, you know, to make issues – put issues in the forefront that we need to hear in the music and also maybe discuss.
Yeah, I think she really embodies that, you know, not mincing words and not hiding behind words, but also, you know, telling the truth in a subtle way, which I really believe in. I think, you know, Alice Girard, I heard her say in an interview one time that she liked Hazel Dickens' protest songs because they were good songs, first of all.
That's right.
You know. And yeah, Ola Bell Reed was that way. You know, I mean, you can say something challenging in a subtle way and make people appeal to it emotionally and connect with you, you know, through a story rather than just beating them on their head with it.
That's right.
And so I really believe in that, and that's what certainly what I try to do, you know, what little bit I can.
Well, I detect that in your approach, and I also understand now from talking to you in the last few seconds that you are a student of the music that you now push forward. Am I correct in that? I don't know you, Sam, and I just read a little bit, but you are a student of the music that you are now a proponent of, correct?
Yeah, I'm a student. I definitely feel that way, and I'm glad that you said that, because I think too often in like contemporary singer-songwriter music or the folk world, people become more of an image than an artist. You know, they think about how they're represented more than what they're really saying. And I just, I really don't want to do that. I do believe that I'm a student, and I'm honored to be at the contemporary end of a long line of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I really admire, you know, I had good mentors. I had generous teachers. Jim Lloyd taught me to play string instruments. Sheila K. Adams, who taught me to sing unaccompanied ballads. Kathy Fink, you know, in teaching me to get behind my original songs and put them out in the world, you know. And there's just so many. I can't name them. And I believe that person-to-person sharing the music and encouraging people has so much to do with the context and the relevance of this music in our time, you know. So I do try to study up. You know, I have a lot of heroes and sheroes, you know, who are passed on that I just got to know through field recordings, and I'm fortunate to have learned from a lot of people in person. You know, so that's how I feel.
See, now I would have guessed that you'd played around in field recordings a little bit. Here's what I think would happen, and I've not seen you live, Sam. But I think that if one of our listeners were to go to a Sam Gleaves concert or performance, first of all, they would be very happy because the music is I think My Dixie Darling is a good representative of what you do. You have that old sound. You wrote your own words. I think you do that often, not often, but enough to where you can use a melody and put some different words to it. I mean, heck, it's not the first time it's been done. You know, people do that all the time. Woody Guthrie didn't write every melody that he sang to.
I think most were that way, yeah. For sure.
But I think my point, I'm losing my point. My point, I think, is if you show up to see Sam Greaves, you're going to see good music. But I also think that I think you're going to have some connective tissue telling a story as to the background of the songs and where they came from and how you get to I believe that's what I would see. I don't know, but am I right on that?
Well, thank you. I mean, I really do believe that the story and the person and the song are kind of inseparable, you know? I really love traditional music for that reason. You know, and I love that people taking old melodies, which have such a power because they've survived in our memory, you know? I mean, the oral tradition is a fascinating thing. And they wouldn't have survived if they didn't have such clarity and such emotion and truth about them, you know? And so adding new lyrics to an old tune, I don't think, you know, some purists would say that's kind of sacrilege, I really think that it is important to the life of the music, you know? Like, if it stagnates, if it loses its relevance, you know, like My Dixie Darling's a good example, because, you know, like, I don't go to cotillions, you know? Like, I'll find myself at balls, you know, dancing with beautiful powdered ladies, you know, like, but I am in love with another man from Virginia, you know, who's a wonderful banjo player. And so I thought about AP and Sarah Carter when they courted, you know, and how music was a big part of their you know, early feelings, you know. So that's what I wanted to impart to the song. It's just that the sweetness of what I was feeling. And I was sitting on my back porch actually in Virginia when I wrote those new words. But I think it's important, you know, and there's a long tradition of Appalachian people adding socially conscious lyrics to old melodies.
Well, and I think that exactly. I mean, the melodies are good in and of themselves, and why, you know, you don't have to rewrite every melody every time you want to make a statement or just write a pretty lyric. Those melodies are there. They pre-existed the first time someone recorded them when you heard them, and they've been around forever. I don't know where they came from, but probably from across the ocean and in different parts of this country. But they're good melodies, and then if you can put good lyrics to it, it makes it that much better. Let's talk about the title cut, Ain't We Brothers. As I opened the show, I read a little bit of a description from the tune, and this is a tune that is wholly written. I mean, this is music and words and everything, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, it sure is.
Why don't you tell the listeners about Ain't We Brothers and why it's now the title cut of this album, which is great.
Yeah, well, thank you. So in 2010, I guess it was, there was a coal miner from West Virginia. Then his name was Sam Hall, and he was an underground coal miner in Kanawha County. And he was openly gay, and he lived with his partner there in the community. And his fellow workers were giving him an awful time, not taking safety measures that they should have, and also, you know, taunting him, vandalizing things. I think they took the wheel weights off of his truck. You know, I mean, they really abused him because they found out he was gay. And I thought, you know, this is really an interesting, you know, probably the first working class gay representative, you know, from the mountains to come forward in a story like this. And it certainly didn't make national headlines, but it resonated with me because, you know, I think we're all sort of wondering, any man that grows up in this world is sort of wondering what masculinity really is, you know, and what, you know, what really makes a man a man. And so these fellow workers of Sam's were putting him through all this discrimination and abuse, and he complained to his you know, the operators at that mine, and they just transferred him and hoped it wouldn't happen again, and it did. And so he went through this tremendous ordeal, and his partner, Burley, was, you know, waiting at home, wondering whether he'd ever come back alive, you know, and all these horrible things. But what came of it was Sam filed a lawsuit against the coal company and won a settlement and spoke out a lot about what had happened to him. And so I just really admired him, and you know, I just thought those workers of his that gave him such a horrible time didn't know what a man he was, you know, for being brave and open and living with another man in that community. And admired his honesty, and I wrote the song from his perspective, and so that's kind of intimidating, you know.
Well, yeah.
When you essentially put words in somebody's mouth. But then I sent him the song, and it took him a couple years, but he responded, and he said that he loved the song and thanked me, you know, and I got to go visit them at their home.
Oh, nice.
In Pinch, West Virginia. So that was very special, and you know, I really felt like I had known him a long time, and so he actually appeared in the music video for the song, which we hope to release next month.
Oh, yeah.
And Tim O'Brien was kind enough to come in and sing on that track, which meant a lot, you know, that he was willing to do that. And also, you know, Tim is just such a gracious, nice, you know, common fella.
Classy guy, and I don't know if you could put him in a song where he can't nail whatever part you want him to sing.
Oh, he was all over it. Yeah, and just nailed that part, drinking black coffee in the booth, and, you know, just a real class act, like you say. And so that song's really kind of changed my life. And so, Kathy, you know, it seemed like the signature song.
Well, it did.
You know, that brought the thread that brought everything together.
It absolutely is. And I think it's a good thing to make it the title of the album. And I think you're exactly right, because certainly this song resonates with you personally. I'm not saying that your life experience is going to be the same as Mr. Williams, but I bet you as you're writing this, I bet it's also you're picking up bits of your own life. Am I correct?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, growing up gay in the rural South is not the easiest hand to be dealt. But, you know, I tell people all the time, because I think that all they read about LGBTQ people in the South is hate crimes, you know, or like people being disowned by their family for religious reasons or what have you, you know? And I just, that's not the whole story. There's a lot of subtlety about Appalachian culture, you know, in that the way things are communicated, and, you know, kind of a lot of unspoken love and acceptance that happens too. And I was fortunate to have really unconditional acceptance from my family.
Oh, good.
You know, my parents and my siblings and, you know, my grandparents and everything. And that just, that means a lot. And I've told people this also, you know, you feel like as a writer, you know, I could look back on my own life and I can write about it and not be ashamed, you know, and it's like that took a barrier away, like my family being accepting in my community, like where I live in Berea, Kentucky, and, you know, the people, like the activism community and the musicians and stuff that I'm surrounded with. And so I can look at my own experiences and write about them without that barrier of feeling shamed or the pain of revisiting them, you know. So I'm fortunate to have had such a good community around me and enabled me to do this. And the way that the record has been received, you know, it's kind of my diary.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a good
5 years of my life.
That's a good description of it. It does follow all that time of your. This didn't just happen last month. What we're saying, right? You've been working on the tunes that made this up for some time. So.
Yeah, I'm fortunate. You know, that gives you a little helping hand. You know, when you do your debut album, because you have had time to write the material, you know, and you're not just pumping something out in a year or whatever.
Stan, let me ask you this. Do you think that being openly gay, does it make you more, and let's touch this on Janice Ian. You know, she sings about issues, obviously, other than her own sexuality. But do you think that it makes you more... how can I do it? But a more socially conscious. In other words, are there more social and just general justice issues that come to your mind that you might seek songs about, or is it just part and parcel of who you are?
Well, you know, I've been fortunate to be part of some efforts that were related to the Highlander Center and spend some time there. That's the Highlander Research and Education Center in New Market, Tennessee, and it's a historic place. Where activists have gathered and strategized to know about how to create positive social change. And they really believe in intersectionality at Highlander, and how, you know, one issue, you know, all people who are oppressed or who are resisting marginalization or what have you, or part of a social movement, have something in common, you know, and they have more in common than they do different. And so I believe in that intersectionality. And so I guess it does make you see some, you know, I'm certainly like very privileged to be a white man, able-bodied, you know, English speaking, all these things in this country, you know, so it's not as if I'm not privileged.
No, I understand.
But I do try to hear, you know, working class voices, like the, you know, the ones in the family I grew up in.
Sure.
And also, you know, try to represent Appalachia in a complex way, you know. And I was taught that. I had good teachers at Berea College, you know, who taught me to speak well about the region.
You do speak well. Let me ask you this. You know, I say that saying this. I've never heard the word intersectionality, but since you've used it twice, you have to tell me what it is specifically. I think I've gathered from the context.
Well,
but what do you mean?
Yeah. You know, it's like roads on a map, you know. It's like even if the lines are different colors, the roads meet somewhere, you know, that, you know, even, like, let's say, Gay Adegbolola is really great about speaking about this. The great blues woman, she was part of the Sapphire.
Oh, sure, the Uppity Sapphire.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and so Gay speaks about this well, and she talks about how, you know, like, she's lived through the civil rights movement and also the queer rights movement, and she's a member of both communities. You know, so she talks about the similarities and the differences and how they intersect, you know. That's what I mean by that.
Okay. All right. Well, there. I learned. I always learn something, but now I have a new word I can put in my.
Well, I'm learning from you too.
So you just had. Am I right? You just had a release of this, like a release event of the new album, Ain't We Brothers?
Yeah, I sure did. So I got to go back to my hometown and do a concert at a great little venue called the Listening Room last weekend, and. So that was great to be welcomed with open arms, you know, in my home community. There's, you know, you can't speak about what all that means. And Kathy Fink drove 5 hours and surprised me. And
okay.
That was just, yeah, it was such a thrill, you know. And I'm proud of what we've done because we were patient. You know, Kathy, you helped me take my time and commit to a really good quality production, you know, which took over a year and a half. So. But she was so generous each step of the way and guiding me and helping me decide everything from, you know, song arrangements to who would do the publicity or who, you know, all the nuts and bolts that you have to go through. And also just having her there, you know, as support the whole time.
Sure.
Been a lot.
Did you record this with and my friend Ben Surratt? Did you?
Yeah. I love Ben Surratt. I will tell the whole world that.
Yeah,
he is great. He and Missy Raines have a wonderful studio in their home.
Mm-hmm.
I so recommend it. It's called the Rec Room Studio, and it's terrific. And Ben, you know, is a great engineer, but also just a really encouraging, sweet person, you know. And so that was great. And to be in Nashville, you know, where Janice lives, where Tim lives, where, you know, most all the session musicians live in Nashville. Russ Paul, Tim Crouch, the fiddler, is from Arkansas. A few people traveled in. Pat McInerney did the percussion. Let me think who else. So, and then some friends of mine came in, my partner, Tyler Hughes, and then also Donovan Kane, who's a great singer from Eastern Kentucky, did a duet with me. I don't want to leave anybody out. Marcy Markser came with Kathy and did some brilliant work. They did some work from their home studio also.
Okay.
And, totally. You know, you listen to Marcy Markser put a guitar part on something, it just brings you to tears.
Perfect.
You know? And Kathy did stack these harmonies on this one song, The Golden Rule, which is like amazing. She's like a one-woman choir, you know.
And I'm looking at the description of the Golden Rule. That was specifically written, of course, both of us are from Kentucky, and I remember this particular bill, but you
yeah,
wrote
what a
this.
Mess that was.
Yeah, go ahead. I mean, you want to tell a little bit about that? Because, like I said, I don't think...
Yeah.
I don't. First of all, Sam, I don't want people to think they're going to go see Sam Gleason and he's going to be a protesty guy. That's not it, but it's beautiful music, but I also think your words are relevant to things that you see around you. So the music is really well done and just really nice and enjoyable music, but something like the Golden Rule, I know why you wrote it. Why don't you explain to the listeners what was behind that?
Yeah, so I do try not to get too preachy when I perform because, like I said, I want the songs to speak for themselves, you know, and the stories to speak for themselves, so I appreciate you recognizing that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But also, you know, this bill was like House Bill 279, I think it was called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which mm-hmm. is kind of laughable, you know. Mm-hmm. And so what it boiled down to was the people in Kentucky have fought so hard for these fairness ordinances in their communities. And so since there's no statewide protection, LGBTQ people can be refused service at a restaurant. They can be fired from their job, and they can be evicted from their home. On the basis of sexual orientation. So that's, you know, that's an injustice that the whole state is facing. But the solution has been grassroots in that people in cities, you know, big cities like Covington and Louisville, but also small little unincorporated areas like Vico, Kentucky, have been organizing and going to their local legislature and saying, hey, fairness needs to be a part of our local legislation. And so when the fairness ordinance is passed, then everyone in the community is protected mm-hmm. because it's about perceived sexual orientation. You know, anybody can be perceived to be gay and fired from their job, you know.
You're right.
It protects everyone. It's human rights legislation, right? And so this Religious Freedom Restoration Act was going to weaken that and say that, you know, on religious grounds, someone could refuse service, evict someone, you know, fire them from their job because of sexual orientation if it was justified by their religion.
Well, you know, Sam, you know as well as I do, it's an end around. It's a way to disguise the effort that's really involved by saying it's
protected.
Yeah, I know,
and that's it was easy to see through, and the mm-hmm. governor vetoed it. You know, I mean, it was not it was not like people didn't see that this what this effort was about. But so anyway, I just thought, you know, preachers getting behind something like that. It's just in such a direct contradiction to the Golden Rule, you know. I mean, and that's just how I see it. And that's I didn't attend church every Sunday growing up, but I listened enough to know that you ought to treat others the way you want to be treated. You
right.
know, so that's the impetus for the song, and I was real thrilled to have Kathy sing the harmonies because she's such a great activist as well as a musician.
Yeah, and again, we're stressing, Sam, and you and I are both doing this. Don't think, number one, that the album is just going to be, you know, protest. It's not that at all, because you do such a good job of writing these songs that are so, and the lyrics that you write to older tunes, it's all good music, but you are very subtly discussing a very important issue and putting it in the context of the Golden Rule, which is a really nice song, and it's got great work with Kathy Fink. You know what I mean? I don't want to come on, and we've said this a couple times, and maybe we're overemphasizing the fact that point shouldn't be emphasized. But I mean, it's not what you're going to do if you hear Sam's new album, Ain't We Brothers, or if you see him perform live. You're not going to feel like, you know, you're going to go marching somewhere. You're just going to be enlightened.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
I think that's your goal, isn't it? Bring the entertain, but also to bring some issues to the forefront in a very nice way.
Yeah, and to also bring these threads of tradition to people that maybe haven't heard them. Or,
right.
You know, I think everyone can connect in some way to stories about real working people, you know?
Yeah, all of them
their
are.
Their love of their home, their love of community, you know? I heard this interview from years past of Gene Ritchie speaking about why she felt like people related to her so much and why they came to her concerts, you know, for all those years. And she said, I think I was part of a community that doesn't exist much anymore, in that when I talk about Kentucky and the little place, the Viper, where she was from, and how people cared for each other and the closeness, and that a lot of people don't get to experience that, and that it was like for a moment she brought them there, you know. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Dean certainly did that. She's a real hero of mine, and I aspire to do that, you know. But like we said earlier, you know, I'm a student. I'm someone who's trying to learn my craft and bring that to people. And I've had a lot of good teachers, and you know, I mean, I feel that at performances often.
Well, I mean,
that homecoming,
right, Sam? And if you just tuned in, we're talking to Sam Gleaves here about the new album, Ain't We Brothers, and all the things that went into creating this great album, and all the bits and pieces that I think you've incorporated into the music that you make and the intent that you have, and this wonderful tradition of mountain and Appalachian music that you still continue to play. You play what, banjo? What else?
Yeah, I mean, I guess my first string instrument was guitar.
Okay.
And I sang all my life. My grandmother is a singer, and she encouraged me. You know, she sings gospel music and leads a children's choir, sings in a quartet and stuff. So she encouraged me to sing from the time I was a kid. And then I took up instruments. I was about 12 or so. I was really wrapped up in folk music of the 60s, like Joan Baez and Bob Dylan and stuff like that. And so I started playing stringed instruments, just teaching myself guitar. And then I went to Jim Lloyd's barbershop in Rural Retreat, Virginia, for lessons from Jim. And he taught all these people, you know, older folks and also people of my generation, how to play the old-time dance music and songs of the Carter family, you know, and stuff from our area. And I was like, wow, you know, like if Joan Baez is singing Little Darling Pal of Mine on her record, you know, and that's a Carter family song.
That's
the
right.
Carter's from just over the hill, you know, and my daddy took me to the Carter family fold when I was a kid, you know. So I was like, I was connecting all those.
You had all these lights go on, and all this thread that was all of a sudden kind of illuminated in front of you.
Yeah, multiple instruments, because so many people do in our tradition. You know, it's like, well, I took a clawhammer banjo next, and then wanted to learn to fingerpick the guitar, you know, and then I wanted to learn to play the fiddle, and wanted to learn to play auto harp because I love the Carter family so much.
Oh, yeah.
And I love Gene Ritchie, so I want to play the dulcimer a little bit, you know. So it's like I kind of tell people, you know, it's really not that impressive, because I just I have a basic working knowledge of some of the instruments, but I like simplicity, you know. I like like that kind of tastefulness, mm-hmm. in traditional music, and so it's like colors in a palette, you know. Like if you're accompanying your voice with a dulcimer or with a banjo, you know, it's like each one has its own mood, its own flavor, kind of, you know.
So. There are, Sam, I agree with you 100%. There are so many great stories as you look through this album. I like the one where you fell asleep listening to a song. And let's see where it was. It was Hazel Dickens. You fell asleep listening to Hazel Dickens in your dorm room. I like these things, how you pull them together. And that tune is just like Jordan, which you do with Lori Lewis, who's been a guest on this show, and I enjoy her stuff too. But you put put those little things in there where this I fell asleep listening to this, and so I woke up and wrote this song. I just think that's a neat process that you're going through.
Well, you know, it's like. You're just being real.
Yeah, that's right.
But I really respect Lori. I love her work, and that she really gets the high lonesome sound, and she really gets the soul, you know, of bluegrass Appalachian music. I really love her music. And so Never in My Wildest Dreams thought I would get to record with Lori. And through the magic of modern technology, she put on her part in California.
Yeah.
From her home studio, but it was like when I heard it, you know, it was such a great surprise, and I really love what she does and her harmonies, you know, and how she can turn apart, you know, and how she can really ornament so beautifully. So that's a real thrill. Hope Lori will hear that.
Sam, when she was on this show, I'll just tell you this, and I want you to continue that bit. When she was on this show, she had just finished hiking like 5,000 miles through some mountains in California. I mean, it was one of those deals. It was she was gone for weeks, and she had food drops, and I thought, my God, I used to do a little bit of backpacking in the Smokies and around the Appalachian Trail, but what she described was just not human that she could do it. And then she just had got finished, came on my show, she released a new album, and to me that alone just blows my mind.
I love these women. You know, it's like Kathy Fink took a couple weeks off and hiked that part of the Appalachian Trail.
Yeah.
You know, it's like these women are just ferocious, fabulous people. You know, like I really love working with these down-home divas, you know.
Down-home divas. Down-home divas and sheroes. See, now I'm writing these notes down because I'm picking up. I got intersectional and intersectionalism, and I have sheroes, which you've said a couple times, which is going to be one of my new words. And down-home divas, I'm having a blast.
Well, you know, my publishing company is called Fabulation.
I saw that.
Another good one.
I did see that.
Yeah. I used to write a humor column, and I went to Berea College, and the student newspaper, we had a humor column called Dispatches from the Down-Home Divas, which was a lot of fun to write.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Me and my buddy, that's online. I should connect you with it.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, Just Like Jordan is about my college roommate, a wonderful guy named Jordan, and he, you know, he was just a true friend. It's a song about true friendship and also about faith. You know, I think a lot of people, especially LGBTQ people, feel like they have to turn their back on their faith, you know, to live. Or they feel like they have to maybe move to an urban area, you know, and be kind of anonymous and be part of this club scene, you know, to find community. And that's not how I felt. You know, I felt sometimes like I've been fortunate to have people in my life that were just, you know, that filled my heart and that were wonderful and almost as supportive as a face, you know, like people who were that generous and that good. And so that's what this song is about. And I love good old country waltzes, you know, like Hazel Dickens. This is a queen of the lonesome waltz. You know, she really she knew how to do that. I've heard somebody say, you know, that it's not the truth if it's not in 3/4 time. I really like that.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, you know, this is true for me sometimes.
Well, Sam, you're not a very old fellow, as I'm guessing from looking at your picture. So the fact that you're pulling in all these old traditional sounds and making them yours, and the fact that you cherish them so much, I just think is so encouraging for the kind of music that you're doing. I enjoy this album. It's all good. It's all traditional. There are stories connected with these songs. And I think that I think it's going to do really well for you, Ain't We Brothers. I really do like it. As soon as I got it and played a tune, I shot you a message, and then I also called Hearth Music. I said, I got to get Sam on. I'm going to talk to him about this music and everything else that he's into. And I am not disappointed that we connected.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, I think folk DJs are just doing the good work, you know.
Where are you now?
Making even less money than we are.
I spend money to do this. Where are you in New York right now?
I'm in Kerhonkson, New York, in the Hudson Valley.
Okay.
Yeah. Upstate, I guess they call it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And so Folk Alliance has been a scream, partying all night with these wild Canadians, and you know, just enjoying the meeting and greeting and a really cool gathering.
If listeners wanted to find out more about Sam Gleaves, you have a website, and I'm assuming they could find where you're going to appear if you have a schedule up there.
Yeah, my live dates are updated on my website.
Okay.
I work full time at Berea College, so I kind of travel on weekends, and but I do love traveling and performing. I love giving workshops, teaching, talking. You know, I'm into that stuff, and community music events. I've worked with a lot of grassroots groups and, you know, that kind of thing. So my schedule's on my website, which is just my name, samgleaves.com, like leaves on a tree with a G in front of it.
Yep.
And, so it's a thrill to talk with you, Steve.
Well,
thanks for having me.
I'm thrilled to get you. And you mentioned this a couple times, Berea College. Let's do a short thumbnail for people who don't know what a treasure that is in the state of Kentucky.
Well, I'm really grateful to have gone to Berea College. I applied because I wanted to be in the college bluegrass band, bluegrass ensemble, directed by my buddy Al White. And so I went traveled a lot with them and performed for 4 years with that band. It's really what drew me to Berea. But then what made me stay was that the college has a real emphasis on social equality, mm-hmm. and always has. Berea College was founded just before the Civil War by a Methodist minister named John Fee, who was an abolitionist. And, you know, he also believes he was anti-caste and he was anti-rum. He was anti-slavery, you know. So he founded this school to educate people from the Appalachian region, poor people with great economic promise, or academic promise,
right,
and limited economic resources. You know, so all students go to Berea on a full scholarship, and they all students work in the college labor program. The college is really everything from, you know, the food preparation in the cafeteria to the groundwork to teaching assisting, and you know, the campus is run by student labor. And that's our, you know, way of serving the community and giving back for what we're given. And so I was really thrilled. I studied folklore at Berea College and loved every minute of it. And I still live and work in Berea.
Well, good.
At the college.
Well, good. Okay. Well, you're not that far down the road from me. If I'm in Kenton County, I go past Berea College all the time. So at some point, I will catch you live as you travel around. And
well, I appreciate that, and I'd certainly love to meet you and shake your hand.
Absolutely. Sam Gleaves, thanks, man. I really enjoy the album. I knew that this, from my point, this conversation would go well. I knew that I would enjoy it. I didn't know that I would learn 3 or 4 new words. So I'm way ahead of the curve.
Well, thank you. And I learned another Steve Martin. So
There you go. All right, Sam. Listen, appreciate it. Keep doing what you're doing. I think you're going to find a lot of happiness and success on the road you've chosen.
Well, thank you for what you do for so many independent artists.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, y'all have a good one.
Thanks, Sam. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
There, that was Sam Gleaves. The album is, and again, we don't want to overstress the fact that it's protesty music that you're going to want to stomp around the venue that you're at. It's not at all. It's gorgeous, traditional Appalachian music with a social conscience, let's call it that. And Sam is a very bright guy, as you've just figured out. And he writes songs. He has reasons why these songs exist in his head. And why they come out and why the topics are what they are. And it is working class issues through Sam's mind and the music that he loves, the traditional music. You can tell he's a student of the music, and he's going to continue to be a student. And someday we can all be students of Sam Gleaves and how he maybe changed the trajectory of some of the folk music and the traditional mountain music that he loves so much. So thanks so much, Sam. I really enjoyed it. Sam's interview will be up on Unreal Bluegrass, I would say within a week or so, if you want to re-listen to it again and pick up some of those cool new words that he's given me. And I'm writing them all down.